Well, there's one thing that's happened in the past week and is actually happening right now, as I speak, and that is very, very significant on the world scene, and something I think I'd like to devote the news analysis to this week, and that is Europe, because as it said in the paper this morning, it said, "Welcome back to the free family of Europe." And it goes on, it says, "The European Union embraces 10 new members today in the most ambitious expansion in its history, creating a vast political, economic, judicial union stretching from the Atlantic to the borders of Russia." And it was people that were in the former Soviet Union, primarily. Those are the ones that have actually joined today. That's the 1st of May. And it is very, very significant. I think really what struck me was a news article or a news piece that appeared on the television last week. I think, I'm not sure it was yesterday or the day before, but there was an interview with Lech Wałęsa. I don't know whether anybody saw that, but it was very short. It wasn't very long at all. It was just, I think it was on the 6 o'clock to 6:30 news, something like that. And they went to the Gdansk shipyard to have a look at it, because obviously that was where the entire separation of the Soviet Union occurred, or began, was right in Gdansk. And of course Lech Wałęsa, who is now the I'm not sure what they actually call him, I presume president of Poland, he was the one who was the union leader at the time. And if you cast your minds back, I know on the news over here, it was continually, there was Lech Wałęsa, right beside him would be the Catholic bishop, archbishop, or somebody. There would be a Catholic priest beside him almost all the time. And it was very clear that the Catholic priest, or the Catholic Church, was in fact guiding the process at that time, and guiding this separation that was taking place. The interesting thing was that in the interview with Lech Wałęsa now, when Poland has just now joined, is that he was scathing on Europe, and he was scathing on the old guard. He was scathing on Germany, on France, on Britain, for trying to get what they wanted, basically. In other words, it was the Germans trying to get everything for the Germans, the French trying to get everything for the French. And what we have coming in to Europe now is a very different group of people. If I just basically read a little bit more of this, the front page article here on the Telegraph this morning, it says, "The enlarged EU of 25 states becomes the world's biggest political union and commercial market, with 455 million people speaking 20 official languages." So it is a huge concern now, and it's become quite dominant in the world scene. Romano Prodi, the president of the European Commission, said that 5 decades after our great project of European integration began, the divisions of the Cold War are gone once and for all. Our new members bring to the Union the cultures and diversity of 10 countries with distinct roots stretching back through the centuries. Now, that is what Lech Wałęsa can see, and that's what he could see, and that's also what the Catholic Church can see. And it goes on, it says, "The extra cost of all 10 states will be £3.5 billion next year, barely making a dent in the EU budget. The new countries add 73 million people, but less than 5% extra to the total economic output of the EU. Never before has the Union faced a marriage on such unequal terms, with per capita income in the Baltic states only a third of the EU levels." So we're looking at a very different people coming in. And what I do have, and what I dug out of my file, were two articles that I'd clipped. In this case, it was from The Independent, and they're dated back in 1988. So the ones that I cut out back in 88, and I just think it's interesting to read what it was going on at that time. Now, there was still the Soviet Union at that time, but there were moves. I'm going to see if I can get these in order. I'll read the one from May first. There were moves at that time to thaw the Soviet Union, and it was this thaw that they could see. And this is written by Enoch Powell. Now, Enoch Powell is regarded as a very right-wing politician, or was at the time. He's dead now. But it's under the title, "The Ghost of the Holy Roman Empire Still Haunts Europe." And said, "We British are naughty about history. smugly satisfied with our rough Ireland story. We doubt if other people ought to think about history at all, or indeed whether they have any history worth thinking about. Well, they have, and they do, and as Europe imagines it catches sight of spring around the corner, they will be remembering a piece of history which I'm afraid tends to move Englishmen to foolish mirth. They will be remembering the Holy Roman Empire. When the laughing has subsided, I'll try and explain why. People's memories in Czechoslovakia, in Austria, in Hungary, run back beyond the Wilsonian redrawing of the map of Europe on a preconceived pattern of nationalities identified by plebiscite. They run back beyond the Austria-Hungarian, which precipitated and participated in the German catastrophe of the 1418 war. They leak across the Hosseleian, I think it is, empire, which Prussia erected by dint of military victory upon the foundations of the North and South German confederations. Behind all this, they recollect an older empire whose title and prestige the Prussians acquired, the empire dismembered by the campaigns of Napoleon and revolutionary France, the empire which the last Augustus, Francis II, abdicated in 1806. And it goes on, it says, so much may be hazarded without absurdity about the Europe which all the governments concerned are now privately daring to imagine. A Europe without the Americans. To go further would be to tumble a similar silly game of playing with nations like chessmen on a board. Events have a way of shaping themselves into forms the historian recognises only in retrospect. After 40 years of imprisonment in a moral and military stereotype, what the continental nations will want to do is to reflect upon their future place in the new scene beginning to unfold. Now, it's taken years, many, many years, for it to come to this place. But what we are seeing is the aspirations of Lech Wałęsa when he first started that strike in the shipyard. And it was Catholic-led from the start. At the same time, as you know, during that year in 1988, the Pope was very vociferous, and he actually addressed the European Union in Strasbourg. And in 12th of October 88, this was what was written, and I think I'll read all of this particular segment. It says, the Pope calls for a united Europe. Now, this is what was going on in 88, shortly after Mr. Armstrong died, and we've been in such chaos ourselves. And now we're seeing this united Europe that the Pope was calling for at that time. And it's come into being, and we're going to have a very different type of Europe that will be emerging with a constitution that cannot have the old constitution and the old government policies that they had previously. It says, Pope John Paul II spoke yesterday of the benefits of a common political structure for the European community and said the EC, it was no longer the EU at that time, it was the EC, Economic Community, as it develops from the economic bloc, should resume its role as a beacon in the civilization of the world. Now that was the vision. He told the European Parliament, this part of Europe, which has invested so much in the domain of its economic cooperation, must be more and more intensely in search of a soul and of an inspiration capable of securing a spiritual cohesion. And he declared a common political structure, far from endangering the identity of the people of the community, will guarantee more fairly the rights, particularly cultural, and by cultural he means Catholic, of all its regions. He's looking to the Catholic Church, obviously. And he goes on a little bit later, it says, but on the day when the browns and greys of Strasbourg were briefly enlivened by the golds, whites and purples of the papal train, it was the Reverend Ian Paisley, the Northern Ireland Unionist, who attracted most attention with a noisy, if scarcely spontaneous, protest against the Antichrist from Rome. And this I remember taking place. Within seconds of the Pope beginning his speech, Mr. Paisley rose to his feet, brandishing a banner with the message, John Paul Antichrist, and shouted repeatedly, I renounce you as the Antichrist. He was given 45 seconds by the Parliament's President, Lord Plum, before being bundled out of the chamber. Mr. Paisley, who likened himself to Thomas Cranmer, the Protestant Archbishop burned at the stake by Mary Tudor, said he'd been obliged to make the protest on behalf of his constituents in Ulster. Now, the Ulster constituents are very much Protestant, and they are against anything to do with Catholic. This is why you've got the problem over in Northern Ireland. It goes back centuries, centuries and centuries. I'd be failing the people who voted for me if I didn't put forward my views forthrightly and uncompromisingly. And the Pope remarked afterwards, I've had to deal with this situation before, it's just a question of keeping calm. His speech, and this is now the Pope's speech, stressed the EC's responsibility to the developing world and reiterated his dream that the community should one day extend its membership to the countries of Eastern Europe, including his own homeland, Poland. Now this is why it's so significant, what's taking place today. And it's taken all these years, but right now, today, this is now happening. Referring to Eastern Europe as the continent's other lung, the Pope said, "My wish is that Europe may one day enlarge the dimensions given her by geography and even more by history." Expressing the hope that a strengthened EC would boost aid to the Third World, the Pope declared, "Speaking with one voice, uniting her forces, she will be able, even more than in the past, to devote new resources and energies to the great task of development." Now the paper assumes that's development of the Third World countries, but you wonder what kind of development it is. And if you go back and look at the medieval European Holy Roman Empire, the development was a Catholic development. That's what's in the Pope's mind. It's nothing to do with the Third World, except as the Catholic Church can be promoted. The Pope's speech was warmly welcomed last night by Jacques Delors, the President of the European Commission, and the main advocate of political union. Lord Plum said it had been a clear message of the importance of unity. I just thought that would be interesting to read in the light of what's now taking place, that the trigger that actually took place all those years ago in Poland that caused the demise of the Soviet Union, this other world power that was there, the trigger was to produce another world power. And that was the aim back at that time, and we must never lose sight of that as we look at the various things which are unfolding at this present time. Now, if we look at the nations themselves, right, before we do that, let's just have a look at a scripture. Let's go over to Daniel and just remind ourselves of something. Daniel chapter 2. I know these scriptures, you know, we read them and read them and read them, but we really do need to read them and read them, because we are living in these times, and the times that we're living in now relate directly to what was going on here in Daniel chapter 2, verse 37. "You, O king, are a king of kings, for the God of heaven has given you kingdom, power, strength, and glory. And wheresoever the children of men dwell, the beasts of the fields and the fowls of the heavens, has he given to your hand, and he has made you ruler over them all. You are this head of gold." So we're looking at government. It is the governmental structure that's being looked at here, and it's starting with Babylon. And it is interesting that when you're looking at what's taking place, if I can just read this article here, remember, it is Babylon that we're talking about. It's got, this is from, what day is this? Friday, yesterday. Europe, the headline is, and this is the main headline right on the very front page of the paper, "Europe don't know and don't care." Now, this is the British concept. And it's interesting that it says Tony Blair will have to overcome widespread ignorance about the EU constitution, indifferent to the European project, and scepticism about his motives if he's to win a referendum next year. Now, the thing that he said, they did a poll, and the poll found that 76% knew little or nothing about it, about the Constitution. So people are totally ignorant of what actually is taking place. A further 4% didn't know whether they knew anything about it or not. And that really is quite significant, and the reason it's significant is that there's so much doublespeak about this. You're never quite sure what you know and what you don't know about the European Union. Your people say, "Oh, it's not a union. Oh, it's not really political integration." And other people are saying, "Oh, yes, it is." And who's right? And so people literally cannot tell. Despite that, a big majority believed that it offered few or no benefits and was likely to work against Britain's interests. So remember, Britain is not going to be part of this final union. Britain will not be part of it. And certainly the indication here, this Babylon of confusion, the name Babylon means confusion. It's called where God confused the languages. And from this head of gold, which was Babylon, it says, verse 39, "And after you shall arise another kingdom inferior to you, and another third kingdom of brass, which shall bear rule over the earth. And the fourth kingdom will be as strong as iron. For as much as iron breaks in pieces and subdues all things, it'll break in pieces and bruise. And whereas you saw the feet and toes part of potter's clay and part of iron, the kingdom will be divided, but there'll be a strength of the iron, for as much as you saw the iron mixed with the miry clay. And as the toes of the feet were part of iron and part of clay, so shall the kingdom be partly strong and partly broken." And you're looking at 2 feet, or 2 legs, and you're going down to 2 feet, and there's always been two divisions within Europe. And what we're looking at today, literally this 1st of May, is the addition of this other leg. You're looking at this other leg of Europe coming into the fold. And it's a very different leg from the one that's in the west. And there are 10 toes, 10 kings, 5 on each leg. And we'll go on, we'll just read a little bit more. It says, "Whereas you saw the iron mixed with miry clay, they will mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they will not stick one to another, even as iron is not mixed with clay." But it says here, there are 20 official languages. And this is the problem. This is why they've got to have a new constitution. Because it cannot function with 25 states. 25 states will not allow this union to function as it has been up to this point. "And in the days of these kings," and he's just been talking about the 10 toes, "the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which will never be destroyed, and the kingdom will not be left to other people, but it will break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it will stand forever." So this particular system that exists is a kingdom, or a series of kingdoms, that is going to exist right through until the time of Christ. And this is why, again, this is very, very significant, what is taking place today. Another comment from the 30th, which was yesterday, says, "For Europe's sake, we must vote no. In the past 10 days, politics has come to life. Tony Blair's decision to hold a referendum on the European Constitution has galvanised not only Westminster, but also the rest of Europe. Tomorrow, 10 new countries will extend the boundaries of the European Union from the Mediterranean to the Baltic, dramatically altering the balance of power." This is why I say this is very significant. The Europe that is now, today, is very different from the Europe that was there yesterday. It is a Europe that is more Catholic dominated. It is dominated by a people who are not westernized, who do not think like America thinks, who think in different ways, whose roots are going back into this Holy Roman Empire, far more even than the Western world and the Western branch of Europe. There are people within the West that do, within the Western Europe, but in the Eastern side, it is more so, because they see that as a step back in the right direction. They see what is taking place. It says, "What does the Constitution say, and what would it really mean?" And it talks about sovereignty. It says, "This Constitution for Europe is established by treaty, which has allowed its advocates to claim that it's not a constitution at all, hence cannot create a superstate. True, there is an exit clause, Article 59. However, the EU as envisaged here resembles a federal state. It would have its own executive, legislature, judiciary, police, civil service, currency, central bank, taxes, army, foreign minister, embassies, and flag. Above all, the EU would have its own legal personality. It would no longer be merely the sum of its parts, but could act on its own right. Our veto is replaced by majority voting." Now, that is very significant, because, again, up to this point, Britain could stop anything that came through. But from this point, they can't. At least from when this comes into effect. "Our veto is replaced by majority voting in most of the remaining areas of policy left by previous treaties. The text speaks of a common foreign and security policy, which member states would be under pressure to support actively and unreservedly in a spirit of loyalty and mutual solidarity. This policy is to be determined by majority voting and implemented by new bureaucracies led by the new foreign minister, who has the job of bringing refractory member states into line. They are warned that to refrain from any action which is contrary to the interests of the Union." That's also built into the very the fabric of the constitution. And what we're actually witnessing, again, this is from today's Telegraph. The actual countries that are coming in now, we've got Malta and Cyprus, which are the two Western countries or Western islands that are coming in at the same time. But the countries in the east are Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Poland, Czech Republic, Slovakia, Slovenia, and Hungary. Now, these are ancient kingdoms, ancient European kingdoms. It says successive conservative governments promoted the idea of widening Europe as a means of arresting the deepening of the EU. Instead, under the Labour government, the expansion of Europe has been accompanied by greater integration. Europe has been both wider and deeper, and so much so that in recent years, Lady Thatcher changed her mind about the benefits of enlargement. I am now unpersuaded by the case for further EU expansion, she wrote in Statecraft, a book published in 2002 as part of her autobiographical series. She urged applicant countries to abandon the quest for membership and said Britain should renegotiate its relationship with the EU or withdraw if necessary. Now, Mrs. Thatcher, who was around at the time supporting the EU during the time in 1988, today sees what has actually come about under successive governments and is alarmed by it. She is not looking at it in the way that she did at that particular time. Again, let's go back to Revelation 13. Revelation 13. And remind ourselves that this end time, it's a combination. It's not just a resurrected Holy Roman Empire. It goes back to Babylon. It goes and has the strength and goes back to the system, the Babylonian system. And I stood upon the sands of the sea, and this is these are the two inset chapters. Chapter 12 is for the church. Chapter 13 is the political force that will be opposing Christ at his return. So, and I stood upon the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns, and upon his horns ten crowns, and upon the heads the names of blasphemy. And the beast that I saw was like to a leopard, and his feet were the feet of a bear, the mouth was the mouth of a lion, and the dragon gave him his power and his seat and great authority. So all the strength of all the animals that were there, the beasts that were there in previous successive resurrections, is in this last end time fulfillment. And I saw one of the heads that were wounded to death, and its deadly wound was healed, and all the world wondered after the beast. Now that's when the Holy Roman Empire came into being. And what we're seeing is a Holy Roman Empire resurrection. And they worshipped the dragon that gave the power to the beast. And they worshipped the beast, saying, who is like to the beast, and who is able to make war with him? And there was given to him a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies and power to continue 42 months, which is 1,260 years. And he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God to blaspheme his name and his tabernacle and those that dwelt in heaven. And it was given to him to make war with the saints and overcome them. And all that dwell on the earth shall worship him whose names are not written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. And it gives us a warning. It says, he that leads into captivity, verse 10, will go into captivity. It gives us encouragement when reading these verses. He that kills with a sword must be killed with a sword. Here is the patience and the faith of the saints. And we've got to keep that in mind, that what we are seeing rising, even though it is taking on a character which we know where it's going to lead to and what in fact is going to happen, and we can see this happening inexorably, we can see the demise of our own countries, of Israel being pushed down continually throughout the world, as it says here, he who leads into captivity, and they are going to eventually lead into captivity, will go into captivity. He that kills with a sword must be killed with a sword. And when the Eastern nations and what is rising over in China is very significant, it seems as if that combined with the former Soviet Union, the Russian side of things, will come down from the northeast down against the beast power, which will be by then down in Palestine, in the area of Palestine. So this is the patience and the faith of the saints. This is what we must keep hold of in our own minds as we see these things unfolding. And part of the things that are unfolding is another article that was in Monday's paper, and I think this one is probably the clincher as to how this will all, you know, come about within Europe. It says, the invisible court of justice will step out of the shadows with unchecked power. And this seems to be the trigger, well, it could well be the trigger that gives what is seems to be something which is altruistic, which is, you know, won't hurt anything and all the rest of it, could completely change overnight. As I said before, the Madrid bombing is very significant because we saw there a mass reaction by people who got onto the streets in their millions. 8 million people got onto the streets immediately and demonstrated against the bombings by Al-Qaeda. And you need something like that, something that will tip the scales, that people come, somebody comes along just at the right time, backed by the Catholic Church, perhaps doing miracles even at that time, or even if it's not doing miracles by that time. It says here, the British people are going to be given the chance to vote on whether to adopt a European constitution. It will be one of the most important decisions we'll ever have to make, affecting the future, not only of Britain, but the whole of Europe, and I will add, the whole of the world. And it goes in, it says, the court is talking about, almost invisible to citizens, the European Court of Justice emerges as the undisputed master in the new constitution, coming of age as a fully-fledged supreme court with vastly increased jurisdiction and the unchecked power to strike down the laws of 25 member states. Now, on the surface, it looks as if they're going to be held in check. But it says, the court will have the task of deciding whether to give emphasis to part 1 or part 3 of the text, which by turns sketch sweeping powers for the EU and then rein back those powers in the fine print. So what they do is the overall, overarching powers are all there. They're all in place in the main points and pillars of the Constitution. But the member states have said, oh, we can't accept that, we can't accept this, and so on. So they add these addendums at the bottom of them. And they're relatively, you know, minor ones, which then give everybody therefore is happy. It says, Article I-14 stipulates that the Union shall adopt measures to ensure the coordination of economic policies of the member states. Now that's Article I-14. Almost inviting Brussels to seize control over the Treasury and the Department of Trade and Industry. Article I-15 says, member states shall unreservedly support the Union's common and foreign security policy in a spirit of loyalty and mutual solidarity. They shall refrain from action contrary to the Union's interests. Now that's the overarching point. That's where they're trying to go. This means whatever the judges of the moment say that it means. It says, the government insists that the charter text has been rendered harmless by fresh explanations and cross-clauses compelling respect for national traditions. The problem is that Britain will have no legal recourse if Euro judges should ever exploit their power to push a federalist agenda, as they have sometimes done in the past. This is the problem. That it depends on what the judges actually define these things to mean. So the fear is that an activist court could push through a policy revolution much as America's Supreme Court spearheaded ideological change in the 50s, 60s and 70s, stretching the United States Constitution to strike down a wide range of conservative laws passed by the elected bodies. How could the founding fathers of America and the things that they drew up promote homosexuality? And how could they, therefore, ban the Ten Commandments from being displayed in a courthouse? It is impossible under the Constitution of the United States, but they do it. How? Because of the interpretation that is put on this Constitution. And when you're looking at the Constitution that's being drawn up for Europe, it is how it is interpreted that is crucial. And as I say, your terrorism is a... It is something that could well be the trigger. Something is going to be the trigger that will cause this thing to arise, and the world will stand in absolute aghast at the power that this thing has when it comes up. And we're seeing these various bits and pieces just being placed in, you know, put into place, just one after another, and yet they've always got these sub clauses and all this paraphernalia that accompanies them that placates people's fears. And yet there is a federalist, the direction is federalist, and it does not have to become completely federal. As we see in Daniel, it's part clay and it's part iron. It's a mixture, and they do not stick together. The ultimate union that will emerge, the one which will be fighting against Christ, will not stick together. It's one which, well, if you go over to, let's have a look, in chapter Revelation 17, again, in traditional scripture here, it says, verse 7, the angel said to me, "Why are you marveling? I'll tell you the mystery of the woman and of the beast that carries her." Now, the woman is the church. It's the Catholic Church. She was right in there back in 1988. And she is right in there today. Have no doubt about that. She is in there today. No doubt whatsoever. Now, European Union, the Western side, probably has no clue. You know, most of the members probably have no real clue. Now, some of them do, but many of them probably don't. But you can be guaranteed that the ones on the Eastern Bloc do. The Lech Walesas of this world do. They're still just as Catholic as they ever have been. The beast that you say, why do you marvel? I'll show you the mystery of the woman and the beast that carries her, which has the seven heads and the ten horns. The beast that you saw was, and is not, and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit and go into perdition. And those that dwell on the earth shall wonder, whose names were not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they behold the beast that was, and is not, and yet is. Yet here is the mind that has wisdom. And this was when it was actually revealed. The seven heads are seven mountains, seven governments on which the woman sits. There are seven kings. Five are fallen, one is, and the other is not yet come. Here is the, you know, it talks about the beast that was, and is not, and yet is. When Mr. Armstrong saw this, it was the end of the Second World War. The beast that was, you could see the medieval Holy Roman Empire, but is not. It had been destroyed. The Mussolini and Hitler rise of that beast had been destroyed, completely ruined, completely decimated. The cities lay in ruins, and yet, as was written here, yet is. And it says, there's seven kings, five are fallen, with Napoleon, that was the five. One is, that was the tail end of the Mussolini, and the other is not yet come, and when it comes, he must continue a short space. So it'll be very, very short, this particular revival. We're not looking at the Europe that will be there, the European beast power, but we are looking at the precursor. And the beast that was and is not, even he is the eighth, he's the eighth Babylonian system, his eighth religious system, and he's of the seven, he's of the seven, and goes into perdition. And the ten horns which you saw are ten kings that have received no kingdom as yet. So at that time they hadn't received a kingdom, and even to this time they haven't yet received a kingdom, as far as we know. As far as we know, I mean, you know, who they are, we don't know. It would be very interesting if to try and cope with the complete chaos that is within Europe, in order to cope with the voting irregularities and everything else, they divided into 10 regions and combined certain of these countries. And that could well happen. And if you have 10 kings over, or 10 government leaders, or 10 bureaucrats, or whatever you want to call them, over these 10 areas, then you could well look at that. Or you could look at a central hub of nations that are, in fact, right in the core of Europe, where there are 10 kings. And then there's periphery nations, which would probably include things like Britain, Denmark, Norway, when the government finally kowtows and browbeats the populace to vote for membership. So the beast, he says, the ten horns you saw are ten kings that have received no kingdom as yet, but received power as king 1 hour with the beast, just 1 hour right at the very end time. These have one mind, and they will give their power and their strength to the beast, So this will be a political union. Right at the very end time, it's partly clay and partly strong, partly broken, part iron, part clay. But it's still going to go ahead, and there's going to be an individual. And the reason Mr. Blair is pushing for so much for all of these things is that there is a presidency. And that presidency will be far greater than anything in Britain. It will be a presidency over, how many million? 455 million people. 25 countries. The biggest power block on the face of this earth. That's what he's, you know, that is what will happen. And there will be a president, a super president, over this grouping. And it says, these shall make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb shall overcome them, for he is Lord of lords and King of kings, and they that are with him are called, chosen, and faithful. So it ties right back to Daniel and the vision there, where the stone cut out without hands smote it on its feet, and it broke the toes. And he said to me, the waters that you see and the horse sits are peoples and multitudes, nations and tongues. It's not just this particular grouping in Europe, but it will then have jurisdiction. And the jurisdiction will be down into South America, which the ties, again, the Catholic ties in South America are huge. And you're not looking at just a mere 455 million people. You're probably looking at a billion and over when you put in South America as well. I don't know how many in Brazil, Chile, Argentina, you know, Ecuador, all of these areas down in there in South America, and they all have traditional links across. Now Africa, how much, again, Southern Africa, Namibia, along the side, which is German in nature, and they will then also have control over the United States of America, Britain, Canada, Australia, New Zealand. They will be in control over these areas because they will have conquered them or be invited in, because it's there, you call to King Jareb, you call to the Assyrian. So you're looking at a vast political, economic power, the greatest of on the earth, and this will fight against Christ. It will have the trouble from the east, which is rising in China, and the union across with China into the other eastern areas, and that will then precipitate Armageddon. And the earth would have been destroyed if it remains like this. So what we're seeing today, the 1st of May in 2004, is very significant. Don't let it go past without just thinking, and thinking very deeply about what we are actually witnessing.